Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Thursday, December 29th, 2011. Well, down here, vocalist Mark Martel will spend much of 2012 traveling with the Queen Extravaganza Tour. Martel, whose audition video went viral late last fall with close to 5 million hits, was one of the two vocalists chosen by a panel of judges, including Queen drummer Roger Taylor, to be part of the Roadshow, which will celebrate the classic rock band's 40th anniversary. Martel found out about the win from his manager the day before it was publicly announced while he sat in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport on the way to a Down Here gig. One news report has Martel describing his reaction to the win as, quote, one of relief, end quote. The same report says, quote, he isn't bothered that one or two churches in the United States canceled Down Here concerts, Christmas concerts, because they were opposed to his involvement with the Queen tour, end quote. The report quotes Martel saying, quote, other than that, the support I've gotten from the Christian community has been completely overwhelming. The next step for Martel are intensive rehearsals that will begin in March, with the tour likely beginning in June. He says there's a possibility the first leg of the tour will pass through Canada. Well, we're going to keep an eye on this story, and since this program is being recorded just prior to the Christmas season, I'm going to be working on having Mark return as a guest in the new year to tell us about his experiences. Well, if you have news about personalities or events where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet, drop me a line at robert@salaministries.ca so I can let the rest of the Arts Connection listeners know. Keep listening, and I'll repeat the email address at the end of the show. That was Mode d'Emploi from Waterloo Region guitarist Jay Calder's Breakfast with Barnabas. Well, Kim Bergsma is an award-winning landscape designer, speaker, and garden class instructor whose book Almost Eden received an honorary mention in the 2010 Word Alive Press Contest. She's on the phone with us tonight from Goderich to talk about the life of a nonfiction writer. Good evening, Kim.
Hi, how are you, Robert?
Not bad.
Good.
Now, as well as Almost Eden, you also write for a number of publications, and mainly on things like gardening and landscaping. How did you get into the writing end of things as a landscaper?
Okay, well, the articles came after the book. My season as a landscaper runs from March until maybe early December, and I think my husband was just more frustrated with me telling him how bored I was in my off season. And it's so interesting how God pairs you with the right person. He sees things in me that I don't see in myself, and he encouraged me that I should write a book, which at the time I thought was absolutely silly, but after a couple of years thinking about it, I thought, well, yeah, maybe I can.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it started.
Now, what did you do in terms of preparing yourself to write the book?
It was, you know, I had a hard time deciding how I could contribute to the gardening books that are already out there. There are so many out there, and publishing is a competitive market. If
mm-hmm.
you have a book on the shelf, it has to be unique in some way. And when I finally decided that I have never seen a book on gardening in a Christian bookstore, it set me right off on the right angle. And it actually baffled me after you think about it. God is the creator of all of these beautiful gardens and things that we have in the world, and yet there isn't a book, Alan, in the Christian bookstore. So when I came up with the idea of writing a landscape design book using stewardly principles of maintenance and placing in a Christian bookstore, then it kind of came together.
Now, in terms of just the actual task of writing, had you written anything before this?
Just small articles. I was the president of our local pro-life group for about 10 years, and I had to write articles a couple of times a year for that job. Other than that, no, I hadn't really dabbled into writing.
So you have the germ of the idea of taking the gardening principles and looking at it from a stewardship perspective as Christians. You've decided that you're now going to put this book together. Walk us through the process of how the book actually came together for you. What type of things did you go through? Did you go to any workshops or anything about, you know, putting books together, publishing, anything like that? Walk us through what happened from that germ of an idea to the point where you're ready to get it published.
The writing came first, and I'd have to say I had never taken a writing class or even a little workshop anywhere. And I have taken many since I've written the book, because we all need to get better at our craft for sure. But for me, I'm a very organized person, and I have a business head. I've run a couple of businesses, and I approached writing the book the same way I would write a business. So I started out with an outline and a very detailed list of the things that I needed to include in the book. And then came the chapter outlines, and it was easy for me to think of what I wanted the chapters to be, because I wanted to include all of the things that God has given us in a garden, which includes people. Gardens aren't just made to look at. They're meant to be with people, to entertain people, and to enjoy your families and sport and things like that. So, once I had the outline, then it flowed from there. And then I picked everyone's brain that I could find or think of to help me on to publication of the book.
You ended up being part of the 2010 Word Alive Press contest, and you got the honorary mention of that. Now, what got you to the point of deciding to even enter something like that?
Honestly, part of it is rejection. I had sent my book, and I had a couple of great agents who were trying to sell it into different markets in the States, but it was seen as a book that was too niche for the Christian market, and I got rejected on that principle. They seemed to love the book, but not like the amount of audience they felt it would reach. And so I decided I may as well enter that press contest. Nothing ventured, nothing gained, right?
Right. Now, the thing with your book, too, is it's a very beautiful book. There's also a lot of photographs, colored photos. I mean, you can't really talk about gardening without showing people what your examples of what you're talking about. That also adds to the challenge of getting something like that published, because now you've got publishers looking at it and thinking of the cost involved with the printing of something like that. Did that ever, was that ever an issue when you, in the rejection process? Did they just say this seems to be, it's going to be too costly to put together?
That was a large part of it. If it was a niche market, that was identifiable, which it is to gardeners, but it was much cheaper to produce, they would take a chance on it. But as you mentioned, it's very expensive to produce a full-color glossy book, and it definitely hindered the publication process for me.
Yeah, and you're also looking at the size, too. This is like a table, a tabletop book, a coffee table book as well, so there's the size element involved as well.
Yeah, and that's something that the publishers could choose as well, right? It was the book that I had envisioned, but a royalty publisher like Cook's or Harvest House or whatever, they could have chosen what size they felt it should be if they were publishing it.
Now, a lot of the writers that I know, and myself included, rejection is just part of the game. And you get to the point where the further along in your journey you are, the more you realize that you know, as well as you try to market it, as well as you try to find the right publisher through your market research, there's always that chance of rejection. What was it like for you to get the letter saying, yeah, we like the, you know, and I'm assuming that someone said, yes, we like this, but, you know, we're not going to be able to do it. What was going through your mind as you were reading through all of these rejection letters?
I actually had no problem with them at all. I was totally and completely honored that they actually took the time to read my book, because so many manuscripts end up on a slush pile that are never seen. And I was truly honored that they actually took the time to go through my book and talk to other people in their houses about it. And they were also very gracious to me. When I did get a rejection, I would call them and ask if I could pick their brain for a moment, and if they could pinpoint anything in particular they thought that needed to change before I sent it somewhere else, or if I could improve my proposal in some manner. And each of those editors were very kind and gracious, and would speak to me about my book so that I could continually improve it before I sent it elsewhere. And they would also give me names and call other editors from other houses that they thought may be interested for me to send it to.
Mm-hmm. You said, too, you had agents that were trying to shop the book around to different publishers and that. What led you to the point of picking an agent?
It's part of, I belong to, as you do, I'm a member of the Word Guild, and the conference that they put on every June is just fabulous. They get excellent agents and editors from all over North America, and at a place like the conference, you have a chance to speak with them one-on-one. So I took all of those opportunities and spoke to whoever I could at such conferences.
And looking at that, that's the other thing, and some of the discussions we have, too, in that it even talks about the whole process of going through and choosing an agent and that. Is that something that I'm thinking of some of our listeners out there who might be beginning writers or just at the start of that journey, is that something that they should look at as they're developing their books and they're writing that, is look at trying to find someone to be an agent for them?
I think it's definitely beneficial. The only difficulty about finding an agent is it's almost as hard to get a really good and helpful agent as it is to actually get a publisher to publish your book. So that being said, it's so important to go to writing workshops and to go to conferences that can teach you about not just the craft of writing, but the whole business of publication. Actually meet people one-on-one.
Well, I need to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm actually want to pick up and follow on that that topic of the whole business of publishing and that as well. So we need to take a quick break. We're going to do that, and when we come back, we'll continue talking to our guest, Kim Bergsma, and continue our conversation about nonfiction writing. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station. Thank you. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to A Spacious Place from Jay Calder's Breakfast with Barnabas CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Kim Bergsma. Kim, a couple of times we've sort of alluded to this whole business of publishing back in, going back to the whole aspect of you being rejected. A lot of that had to do with the fact that the publishers looked at it and probably figured they couldn't make any money on it. As a business person yourself, was that something you were aware of, and did that make it easier for you to go through some of the rejections, as understanding that this is as much a business as it is about creativity?
Absolutely. I never once felt the squeeze of being rejected. It's really just part of it, and I understand that they need to produce books that are going to that are more sure of producing money for them. And a lot of those, every place I looked at were in the States as well. And although I have a certain following in my area, I don't in the United States, which also makes a difference. And I approached Mark Cullen, who he's pretty much known as the king of horticulture in Canada, to endorse my book, and he was very gracious to do so for me. And that as a marketing tool is huge. If someone can get a well-known person in the area of their book to endorse it, mm-hmm. there's just nothing better that you can have in the marketing of your book.
And that's a huge thing, too, is that whole aspect of marketing. And one of the biggest challenges I think writers are facing these days is once they get a book published, and you know, we were just at an event recently where there were about half a dozen of us, and you get your book published, but now you have to sort of take off the creative hat that looks at, you know, writing the words and putting the words on paper, and now selling the product. Was that a big leap for you in order to be able to make that switch from creative writer to product marketer?
I'm probably more adept at the product marketing angle just because of the different businesses that I've been involved in, and my head just works that way. And for example, even while I was writing my book, I was thinking, how can I market it? And just a quick aside, I believe it's probably easier to market a non-fiction book than it is a fiction. My book's on gardening, and my audience is very identifiable as gardeners. So when I was taking pictures for the book, I specifically took pictures in public gardens that had gift shops, and not little public gardens, places like Butchard Gardens that put through almost 1 million people a year, places like that. So hoping that if I included pictures of their properties in my book, that then they would also shelf it in their gift store later.
Mm-hmm.
So what every angle that you can think of where your audience is for your book, you need to think of how you're going to get it in front of that audience. And you have to think these days out of the bookstore. You honestly can't just rely on a Christian bookstore or on the mainline bookstores, Chapters and Barnes & Noble and such. It's a very competitive market, and you need to think, where else can my book be placed that it may be an avenue for sales?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a whole other topic, and I think maybe we'll need to spend a whole show on that whole business of publishing and the business of marketing and that. Looking at Almost Eden, going back to the actual book itself, what did you do to distinguish that from any of the other gardening books that are out there?
The largest thing is including the Christian aspect. As a landscape designer, I'm absolutely certain that I am never, ever going to create a garden as fabulous as God's gardens that he created in nature. I do my best to mimic it. So as an appreciation to God, the creator, it needed to be a Christian book, and as a Christian. And he's given us the biblical mandate right in Genesis to care for his earth And what have we done? We've just thrown chemicals at our gardens to produce larger, bigger, prettier things that really have just infected our soils, our water systems, and then ourselves as people. So someone who is not a Christian would call eco-gardening, it's really the same as stewardly gardening. So my book is about good design using eco-principles that I prefer to consider stewardly principles that God gave us at the very beginning. So my book is mostly different because it has the stewardly aspect of how God actually wants us to care for his earth.
Well, what's been the reaction to that as people have picked it? I mean, looking at it, and if you look at it on the store shelf, it looks like any other gardening book. What's been the reaction as people read through and discover these principles of godly stewardship?
It's been very well accepted by people who are not Christians or not visibly Christians, as it has been Christians. There's Bible verses that that start every chapter off, and the rest of the book is written with the principles, but not in-your-face principles, if you know what I mean. It's, mm-hmm. it's written as an eco-book, but you can read underneath that it is a book on stewardship.
So what's next for you? You've got another book out there that you're thinking of putting together?
Yeah, I have one that I'm playing with right now. I probably wouldn't finish it for a couple of years. I'd like to get this book just released in May of this year, and I'd like to give it a little bit of a go for a couple of years before I would release another book. But I would like to get into the food gardening aspect, and I think that with tighter budgets and people being concerned about the chemicals on the food they buy at the grocery store, I think it's a natural that people are going to want to get back into producing and canning and freezing and preserving their own foods. So that's my next project.
So, and you just mentioned, too, that you're going to live at Almost Eden, go give it a couple of years to go through. And I think that's the thing, too, when you're looking at some nonfiction books, there's often less of a timeline associated with them. Than there are with other books. That there's something that you can, this is something that you can sell, you know, for years as long as the gardening principles don't change.
I agree, and I also thought about that when I was writing the book and specifically taking the pictures. I made sure that I did not include any people in my pictures because people's hairstyles, clothes, and glasses can date a book very quickly. But beautiful gardens and pictures of animals and stuff, they don't date.
Mm-hmm.
It does help to keep the book timeless.
Great. Now, how can people get a copy of Almost Eden?
They can go to any Christian bookstore or Chapters, Kohl's, any of those, and order it if it's not on the shelf there. Some of them are stocking the book. And they can also go to my website, which is just www.kimbergsma.ca, and they can order it from there. And there's also an ebook available on my website now too.
How did the ebook turn out with the photos and things like that?
It actually turned out great. I had personally thought that it wouldn't look that great as an ebook, and I was very pleasantly surprised. It actually is very readable, and the pictures still look great on the ebook.
Great. Kim, thanks a lot for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me, Robert. I appreciate that.
And thank you for listening to Arts Connection today. Thanking my guest, Kim Bergsma. Be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, email robert@selawministries, that's S-E-L-A-W ministries.ca, or follow us on Twitter at selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selav Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.